WCOMLP in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. That's 103.5 on FM. And this is another edition of Touchstones, which explores religious and spiritual experience as we here in the cosmopolitan triangle experience it. Today I have a guest who is going to be telling us about an initiative that originated down in Raleigh, the other end of the triangle, which has a website called the yearoflove.com. Is that right?
.org.
.org.
Yes, sir.
It's the yearoflove.org, all one word, and it's available to look at on the internet. And we will announce this again in a little bit. So, Aaron, tell us a little bit about yourself before we discuss the this initiative of the Year of Love.
Certainly. Well, I had a very interesting upbringing. I actually grew up overseas. My mom was in the Foreign Service. I grew up in Pakistan, Thailand, and the Philippines. This was between first and seventh grade. So right from the get-go, I had an upbringing of being around different types of people and variety. And after we were done being overseas, I came to Maryland, where I finished eighth grade and high school. Then I came to Raleigh, to NC State, where I've completed a degree in marketing, business management.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much, you know, all these, it seems like it's happened so quickly, you know, all these, life just flies, and I'm here now out of college. So, you know, what I found out in college was I discovered a book called The Magic of Thinking Big. My friend lent me this book, and that introduced me to the self-help field. It introduced me to how you can actually use your thoughts to get whatever it is you want, you know, and this led me on a path of just digging through knowledge of all types. The self-help industry, I was very driven by success, but what I eventually realized was that a lot of these self-help books are missing such a big part of the picture, which is a deep spiritual existence. They sort of cover an outer shell of success and being able to speak well to people and being able to conduct yourself well. However, I saw there was an internal piece that was kind of missing.
Sort of. Now, okay, there's actually, it's a very complex history of self-help books in America.
Mm-hmm.
And to some degree in England and the rest in Europe, but the American self-help movement does have spiritual roots.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the science of mind, what was called New Thought. This is about 1900.
Oh.
Have you heard of New Thought?
I haven't. I've heard of Science of the Mind.
Yeah, Science of the Mind is a derivative of New Thought.
Ah, okay.
It was one of the ways it was institutionalized. Before New Thought was given the name New Thought, an early version of it was Christian Science.
Mm.
And Mary Baker Eddy's work, something called Science and Key to the Scriptures. About a decade after she founded the Christian Scientists, the people that she had studied from Quimby, who was a dentist and also dealt with hypnosis, and hypnosis with suggestion.
Mm.
And this moved on to eventually gave rise to a number of New Thought writers. That also influenced the early occult movements and things.
Interesting.
Like the Kabbalah.
Hmm.
was a book of was popular, and was written by a lawyer who also dealt in New Thought things. I forget what his name is right offhand. Kabbalah is actually called by about three initiates. I think Atkinson, who I think was the lawyer, was one of them. The other one was Paul Case, who was known years later for his correspondence school of tarot interpretation.
Hmm.
As people know, other people know who listen to my show, I am a tarot reader. It's one of my hobbies.
Yeah, that's right. I remember you did that when I first met you, learned about that. And, you know, another comment about the self-help field is I find that it's sort of been, you know, it's interesting to hear that there was this very spiritual root in it, because now it's as if it's been just diluted to, you know, for mass marketing. And so what I think is that there's been a big piece that's been lost. So when I started to synthesize all these books together, I saw a common thread as, well, we're obviously working on ourselves deeply inside. And it almost seems like, you know, people independently are doing all this development, and I didn't see people out in the open actively discussing, you know, hey, you know, here's how I overcame this problem, or here's how I overcame this problem. Particularly, like, you know, you see business people, they obviously know how to handle criticism and tough tension and stress and emotional situations. But, you know, I just feel like it's not really shared in a very widespread way, in a deep spiritual way. I feel like that's kind of missing sometimes.
Well, actually, I see it a little differently. I've always had a historicist's interest in where ideas were before I was born, mm-hmm. and how they developed and how they get clothed, how they get recirculated. And it's sort of like, let's take the 60s. There was a sexual revolution in the 60s that was, you know, related to things such as, you know, effective birth control and some other things helped create this change in mores and behavior. And every generation comes along, and there have been several since the 60s, all think that they reinvent sex, and that somehow their parents, who are the ones that were responsible for getting them here, don't know anything about it. I mean, which is hilarious in a way, and it's strange that we have, apparently there's a sexual sleep that takes place amongst parents once they have children. Once they have their brood, there's this period where they all become completely incapable of giving sex education to their children, so their children have to reinvent it. And of course, because they're reinventing it, this is an American cycle, folks, particularly. Because here it is, all these people who were raised during the sexual revolution in the 60s are now the backbone, or at least an aspect, of the people who are afraid to have sex education in the schools.
Really?
I mean, you know, what's going on here? I mean, this is us. This is what we do. We go through this revolution. When is the big invention of sex take place? Well, it takes place when you're an adolescent and your hormones change. And that's an individual thing. And it's a generational thing in that, you know, your sex is a big drive towards intimacy that grabs us and wants to make us go towards, things. And this is kind of where we're going to introduce the particular topic today, which is the love formula. Mm-hmm. Now, who wrote this? There's the guy who's responsible for
this
thing.
Yes, so Justin Carboneau, he co-created this website with me. Mm-hmm. This idea actually came to him in a dream. He saw the year 2008 combined with the word love, and if you go on our website, you can see there's an image with love combined with 2008. So he actually wrote this. He basically took a lot of information that he had been experiencing and learning about, and he basically brought it all together in five easy steps.
And what it is it's a formula towards to what love is. I myself am familiar with self-help books and also New Age techniques of things. Didn't find anything particularly original in any of this stuff.
Definitely not. Yeah.
But it is an interesting amalgam, and also I found it grotesque.
Really?
Well, it's only from the point of view of someone who has a theology of love.
Mm.
Right, you know, and if you're a Christian, or even if you're not a Christian, many people believe that God is love, and if God is love, then it's a lot more than something that we should use to wash our clothes with.
Definitely,
and you know, like you were saying, this is spiritual experience. Many people who have spiritual experiences equate them with their deepest longings of the mystery of love. And there's a mystery of love.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a conscious recognition in this formula of that mystery, at least in the way I read it. However, I'm not insisting that my reading of it is the only way it can be read.
Sure.
So let's start with the first step, which is you think of a problem that's bothering you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Any problem.
Yep.
And now you would locate it, you identify what it is, and it's just so you got to figure out, you got to identify the one problem. And then you're going to, now that you've identified it, you're actually, as he says, you're already 50% on the way toward conquering your problem, because you have identified the problem and you're seeking to fix it. So then the rest of it is so you find a problem, mm-hmm. And something that's bothering you, something that's preventing you from having satisfaction in your life. So how do you see that, Aaron?
How do I see it? Well, yeah, I actually redid this just the other day, you know, and I had some things that had come up in my mind. Like, one of the things was, it was very wealth-centered. You know, we're at a time where people are starting to cut costs and having just these sort of tense feelings about money. So, you know, I sort of flushed out one of the things that had been bothering me, like, was with regard to wealth. Maybe I'm not being productive enough, or I'm not pushing myself to be the best, nervous about maybe situations. And so, you know, this is something that you can just take any equivalent of this problem. Like, another, I actually did two at once. Another one was personal organization. Like, I have a lot of clutter, and, you know, I've been making it a very big priority to stay organized, because I feel like, you know, our environment is a sacred space. So, you know, I want this whole mentality to permeate into our environment. Personal organization and wealth that's kind of what I started with. You know, they were just things that had just kind of been bothering me. And I think we all have these sort of, you could call them bugs, or they're just kind of there bothering you, you know? And yeah. So this is bringing them out.
Okay. So let's choose one of those.
Okay.
We're going to do a little thought experiment.
Okay.
We're going to work through it, at least theoretically, as far as the rest of the formula goes.
Okay.
So which one do you want to choose of the ones that you chose?
Let's do the wealth one.
Okay. Yeah. That, you know, and everybody's, you know, with the downturn of the economy and, you know, the rise of energy costs, everybody feels, everybody's getting a little less than they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that definitely is an easy one. Okay. So step two, or actually it's step one here, an exercise. After we've identified the problem, we have acknowledge our feelings towards the problem. Okay, so explain that. Explain that to our listeners.
Okay, so let's say you're feeling just, you know, this twinge, this stress, this bug about wealth. So, you know, let's think about it. What do you feel exactly? Do you feel anxious? Do you feel like a scarcity? There's not enough. Do you feel nervous about what's coming up? Do you feel fearful? Do you feel like, you know, how are you going to make it? You know, so you just sort of put all this out there that, you know, you're feeling like this. And it's very freeing to do this. It's very freeing to just say, I feel like this. And, you know, because sometimes one of the things with self-help, it almost teaches you to always reach for that positive thought. So it almost pushes away, like, any negative, almost like ignoring the fact that a negative thought or feeling might exist. But they're really indicators. So we're, you know, reading the alarms, per se, you know.
So one of the things is you're doing more than just acknowledging your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You actually want somebody to go into and experience these feelings. In other words, even cultivate them to the extreme degree. So, you know, think about, okay, my income is sliced, you know, it may be hard for me to pay my rent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might become homeless, you know, and you have this cascade of catastrophe that follows, which is one of the ways that we may ideate fear. So, okay, mm-hmm. I'm terrified that I won't be able to take care of myself, and I'll have to depend on others who I can't necessarily depend on for material support, and I'll get into trouble, and I'll get a bad reputation. And I'll lose my job.
Right.
you know, this is a problem. You know, I'm afraid to you know, be sick because I'm going to lose my job. So, okay, so we have these issues of fear, mm-hmm. based on, you know, real possibilities that we could have in our life, imagined at least, and but also real. I mean, you know, any of us can become catastrophically sick mm-hmm. at any moment. And you know, and in that way, face bankruptcy and the loss of much of what we were thinking we had, and in terms of even a self capacity to heal and things like that. So okay, so we feel the terror.
Correct.
The numbing terror of this, okay, imaginatively now. And sure. Okay, what else? What other feelings are involved with this?
With my example?
Yeah, for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the productivity, like, you know, maybe I'm not taking the right actions, or I'm not being productive enough. Like in my day, there's a certain number of hours.
That's assuming you have agency. But let's say you're really seriously impeded. You know, okay. There are no jobs.
Uh-huh.
You know, nobody's going to be paying you to do any of this stuff.
Right.
All right. So what do you do?
Well.
And you see, you still think that you can do something about it, don't you? You still think that, and you think that as long as you can do something that you'll be effective to some degree, don't you?
Sure. I mean.
But you know, it's possible.
Yes.
In terms of the feelings now. We're talking about feelings.
Okay.
That may not be the case.
Mm-hmm.
So, all of a sudden, you know, imagine you're in a body cast and you can't move yet. You're a quadriplegic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have no agency anymore.
Right.
People feed you, and they don't necessarily, you know, they aren't going to scratch an itch that you can't even tell them about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, think about that. That's pretty terrifying, isn't it?
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to experience these feelings, let's experience them.
All right.
See, what you're doing is you're avoiding experiencing the feelings by thinking you can do something about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but,
all right.
You know, then there's other things. Also, you know, damn it, if I... and I obviously don't know who's listening to this show, but and so anybody who does have serious disabilities, I apologize for bringing some of these things up at this point, because in some ways I can't imagine it, and we can't imagine the misery and the suffering that you may have in your own life. That's real, and that you experience in a daily and chronic way in which there may not seem any way out except accepting it at some deep level. But,
you know, you're bringing up an interesting point, which is it's a lot easier for some of us to just say, oh, I'm going to think love. Like, I'm going to wake up in the morning and think love. I have all my movement and all that. And so I do believe that some people have a greater task to, you know, it's like going to take more effort for them to live in a loving mindset and manner. So there's definitely an aspect of admiration for people that are in more difficult situations where it's not as easy. You know, what about being in the third world? You know, I don't think it's as easy. I mean, we're making it very simple and easy to do, but the fact is, I mean, you know, your environment could be not very supportive of a loving, it might not be a loving environment, or, you know, I remember like being in high school, sometimes that can be tough, you know, to think about love when you're around people that might be, you know, making fun of you, or so there's definitely a lot of challenges that it's not as easy as we would like it to be. However, yeah. It can be.
Well, again, you're making that turn too easily. Now, one of the things you say here, or that says on the pamphlet, is if you feel anxious, let it be okay. So the idea is, you know, get into the full sense of anxiousness and let the anxiousness be there without, you're not pushing it away.
Mm-hmm.
And by letting it be okay, there's a degree of acceptance. An acceptance not of saying, no, there is no anxiety here.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not pushing the anxiety away. At least, however, the writer immediately says here, simply acknowledge how you feel and allow yourself to feel it without judgment. See now, like when you made that turn that I was questioning a second ago, that's a judgment.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's an interesting one. I mean, it's one based on your sense that you can do something about
right.
change, which is, you know, it would make sense. You're a healthy guy, and you know, relatively, you can get through the world and mm-hmm. do what you want. You know, and it's a habit of mind.
Yeah,
yeah. And but any kind of thinking is judgmental. In other words, any kind of thinking is a judgment. If you think about something, you've judged it, not in its being, but in its agency. Because judgments deal with what you can do and what you can't do. Being deals with something. It deals with the basis of, upon either of those possibilities.
So it made it seem like you're going to judge it no matter what in some form.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Right. Well, you know, thinking and judging are sort of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So when it says, you know, judge not lest you be judged,
right.
You're thinking specifically about this issue of discriminating. You know, mm-hmm. you know, and it's perfectly fine. You know, I mean, I like red rather than blue. You know, I mean, that's a discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
You know, but it's not. You know, it's one of, you know, sometimes I might like blue better than red. You know, but now, but he says this is a very powerful step. He goes on. He says, bad feelings go away very quickly once you allow yourself to experience them fully and consciously. Now, this is based on the author who wrote this.
Right.
And to be honest with you, folks, that ain't true. For some people, it may be that aspects, that what they're afraid of is feeling bad. So when they allow themselves to feel the bad feelings, they are less afraid of the bad feelings. However, if you are habituated to feeling bad or are bad, their feelings will not just go mm-hmm. away when you accept that misery at the time. It's a little deeper than that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one issue that I had a little difficulty
sure.
with at the moment.
That's fair.
But we're not. We want to actually get through all the five steps, so we're not going to hang on every one and give it a hard one. We actually go on to even a more difficult step here. So in some ways, and there's a classic pattern, which is alchemical and also in religious life. It's a very simple pattern. You have three steps.
Mm-hmm.
You have the via purgatoria, which is the purgation, of which we've dealt with a little purgation here. And we're going to deal with maybe a little bit more. And then you have the via illuminative path, and then you have the via unitive path. And this is the three levels of union with the divine, as recognized by a lot of religious traditions. And purgation is one that a lot of people like to skip, you know, because I don't want to do that. I'm already pure, you know. Go on, let me get some of that good, that sweet light, you know, that illumination, that
just
ecstasy,
drink it up, man. Just drink
it. I can take it. I can take it. Yeah.
Breathe it in.
I don't need none of that bad stuff. I don't need to feel bad. I'm okay. But we won't deal with that kind of denial. We're going to go on to forgive, forgive, forgive. This is exercise two.
That's right.
So let's go through it a little bit. Now, write down the names of every person connected with your problem. All right. Well, besides George Burris, who are you going to write down on your list around your issues? No, you don't have to name real people here.
Sure.
But,
no.
But how do you see people related to this issue,
you know,
of your money?
Well, for me,
of the economic downturn that we're suffering from these days.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I have the mentality that we should and need to take responsibility for everything that happens to us. So I put myself first, you know, that I'm connected.
Well, that's the last thing you do here, see?
Yeah, right.
So I sort of
switched it up on it because, you know, I tend to not think of things outside myself. So I sort of
it's that overconfident sense of agency you got. That's okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So
you put yourself in big
capitals. Yeah, I put myself.
Big capital letters, Aaron. Okay.
Maybe, you know, you could put on their dream stealers. You know, people that basically say your ideas aren't going to work, you know.
Like me.
Yeah. Well, you're not a dream stealer.
I'm working hard here now.
You're just...
I've got Irkut here. I'm working hard to stick pins in that balloon of happiness that he's trying to
no,
show.
No, 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 that's fine. No, I don't think you're a dream stealer. I think you're asking valid questions and just challenging, which is going to help us get better and think things through more, which is
right.
Totally fine.
Yeah,
so
we're just playing here. Okay, go on.
Yeah.
Okay, so continue with this stuff.
I even, you know, you could put down society, like for the programming you receive to think that way. That could include like the media. It could include academia. It could
be the grumpy waitress that spilled coffee on you this morning. I mean, the thing is now okay, but it goes on here. It says, you know, so there are, you know, people involved in our condition, and the issue here is write down their names connected right. with this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Yeah, and I guess I took a step further and put, you know, bigger entities, because, you know, you might have more than just, like, a person. There might be an entire organization or, you know, maybe some bigger factors that aren't, like, one person exactly, you know,
yeah.
so.
Yeah, and I, you know, that professor that gave me a lousy write-up so I didn't get into graduate school, you know, where I could be in deeper debt now and
more indoctrinated with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, whatever.
There you go.
But the, now he says, here comes the hard part. You have to completely forgive them all. Well, okay, let's do that in pieces.
Okay.
All right, so, but then it goes on. Then you have a simple act of forgive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so first thing is, okay, so you have to forgive. All right, well, what do you think this forgiveness is? What's this have to forgive stuff? What is forgiveness?
I consider it a releasing aspect. To be honest with you, it's a very selfish act because you're basically doing it for yourself. You don't have to tell the other person. It can be all in your own mind, or you can speak
yeah, there
it
was,
aloud.
There was a self-help consciousness guru from a decade or two ago called Patricia. I forget what her last name was, Connington or something, but what she did... she wrote a book called Releasing, mm-hmm. and actually the way you are using forgiveness is very similar to what she called releasing. She had a very elaborate series of exercises dealing with release.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you do is you have, in her simple ways, is you have something that has a little affect to it.
Mm-hmm.
Positive or negative doesn't really matter. And the idea was to let that little bit of attachment and let it go, so mm-hmm. you don't feel quite attached. You do it with little stuff initially.
Right.
So you feel a sense of neutrality about what the person or the situation. Now, you know, one of the things we've done is we've acknowledged all of our feelings from the previous, the initial exercise, and now we're going on to forgiveness, which is releasing, which is sort of resetting ourselves to neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not denying how we feel. Mm-hmm. We're not denying that these feelings are there. We're not pushing them away. We're not, but we're trying to get a sense of neutrality, an emotional and attachment. See, you know, love in the complicated world of relationships is really, you know, an intimacy is definitely related to attachment. We have attachments.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very strong, and they are made not necessarily consciously. They just naturally happen to people who are relatively ordinary. If you're a psychopath, you might not ever get attached, and then you just fend attachment to manipulate other people. But
mm-hmm.
for the most part, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the people who, like most of us poor jerks who get bound up in each other and don't know myself from the other person too well sometimes. So attachment's there. And mm-hmm. one of the ways, you know, you want to reset healthy attachments is, you know, sometimes you have to have this step back. And,
mm-hmm.
and if you want to keep the attachment healthy, you have to, you know, you have to let go. I mean, everybody's going to hurt you or do you wrong at some point, no matter how much they claim they love you.
And I have one thing to share about that. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but sometimes, like a professor you described or a person who said something, you know, not very nice to you, I don't know if you ever have this where you sort of replay these scenarios in your head, like you almost replay it. And I found myself sometimes if you are dwelling on the past and not forgiving, you'll sort of have these perpetual replays in your mind, like a movie playing of the scenario again and again. And like I found myself saying, I don't want
this
to
is, that's
have
an obsession
replays.
Yeah, this is that's obsessional thing, which is when the attachment is going bad. It's like a scab. When the attachment's going bad, when the wound is, it's both healing and unhealing, because eventually, you know, if you keep playing it over and over again, In some cases, you'll eventually get bored with it, but by then you'll probably felt that you've been going crazy 10 times over.
Right.
So obsessional thinking is one of the ways that we know that our attachments are getting kicked up.
Right, and you might even have replay like your own outcome where you really told them off or something. You know, I find that happening sometimes.
Okay, you're fantasizing that, you know, okay, that boss who's preventing me from getting my raise, you know, I'm going to go and kill him off.
Yeah, exactly. So this is sort of the solution to that, you know, and to kind of end that perpetual movie playing, you know, that reel that just keeps going in a circle.
Well, okay, so how do you effectively do this? How do you, Aaron, turn off the replay
and sure.
the revenge scenario?
Well, the way we do it here is you picture that scenario, that person, even that feeling in your mind, and that's when you start to say the forgiveness prayer. This isn't by any means like a, you know, the only one you can use. There's a lot of ways that, this can be said.
So what they're attempting to do is, one of the things you're doing here is you're doing a substitution. So I'm going to substitute my revenge fantasy of boiling in oil very slowly my boss for not giving me that raise in 1962. And, and I'm also going to forgive my lover who jilted me back in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to forgive these people by substituting, instead of sort of, you know, dwelling on those sweet thoughts of revenge and other
the
things.
The oil and such.
Cauldrons. Yeah, I'm going to take something. I'm going to see them, loved and cared for in their own situation. I don't have to get too explicit about it, that they have their own reasons and their own limitations. And I'm going to say something over and over again in a sort of disruptive, obsessional way. I'm going to say, I forgive you completely and unconditionally. And forget the incident that happened between us. Actually, I ain't going to forget it. I'm just going to reframe it so that I understand that it was for our better good.
How about release?
I release, yes.
That's much better.
And I promise never to bring it up again. Oh, well, actually, I probably will. But but then again, it's not that I won't bring it up again. I promise that it will never come up again because I am utterly awash in forgiveness. I release any anger and resentment toward you, Bush, and wish that you love and you have light in your life. So in other words, what I'm doing here is I'm trying to reset the things now, sure. and I'm going to say that at some degree, though he doesn't suggest this in the work here, that you're trying to reframe your obsession. You may not be able to change your obsession initially. Mm-hmm. In other
right.
words, you know, I mean, there is a kind of satisfaction, you know, watching this guy suffer, and you know, and then revenge fantasies are much more common than we'd like to imagine.
And then look at movies, you know, they actually have the person being successful in their revenge, and so it's this like catharsis that the audience experiences. So it's like, oh yeah, well look, you had to revenge, you get a catharsis, and
you feel good.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
And it's pretty easy us for taking one authority figure and sticking another one in there. But the but in this case, what we're trying to do is we're trying to release. We're trying to short circuit. So one of the ways is you can't necessarily if you're really feeling obsessional about somebody or something, and you've got the thought returning to you over and over again, then what you can do is you can say, okay, if this thought comes up to me, I'm going to immediately reframe it by saying, you know, I forgive you, mm-hmm. I love you, I release the pain and the misery that's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the pain and the misery doesn't necessarily go away, but you're still doing this practice. Mm-hmm. So you're reframing the obsession to a positive obsession. And eventually things will quiet down. And by changing the terms, which is what we've done as part of this, we haven't actually fully forgiven yet. But this is the road to forgiveness.
Sure.
This is the four to forgiveness. You know how you have foreplay? This is forgive. This is the four to givenness.
There you go.
And givenness actually would be where we have an equanimity. And the difference there is to forgive in a spiritual sense, like is accompanied to the same act as a creation. In other words, for creation to take place, and God's all perfect, so therefore there was no need for God to create anything. So in order to make a space for us less than perfect creatures to pop into the universe, he had to create a little space, a little place. And this was the four. So he forgave everything before there was room for us to exist.
Oh, okay. So forgiveness created a space.
Yeah, and it happened before creation. So
wow.
Forgiveness is the necessary condition before the creative act of the divine. And this is actually, this is formulated, the way I'm talking about it, specifically a Sufi Islamic idea. But the but it actually exists in Christian mystics too. So you've gone from, so what you're trying to get back to then is the ground of pre-creation.
Yeah.
Now, the ground of pre-creation is serene and quiet and open and allows everything to take place, both the stuff we would rather not have take place and the stuff we would rather have take place. In other words, it has room for all the things that we see as, good and bad, life and death, pleasure and suffering. They all exist within that realm. And so in this case, the forgiveness is a profound meditative state. Or can be, and it takes place. Would notice it maybe after the exhaustion of our obsessional thinking about X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, it's almost like I think of it as like a cleaning, a scrubbing, a detoxing of your feeling state.
Right, right, and that's definitely the way it's given here. In a lot of ways, one of the things about this particular love formula situation is that we are talking about love primarily as we apprehend love as a feeling. Now, if we take seriously the idea that love is divine, then love is going to be more than our feelings of love. If you're in a committed relationship, an attached relationship with somebody, it's going to be more than I just feel naturally that I love them. That might be easy to evoke, particularly if you're infatuated. But infatuation passes, unfortunately. And what happens is, for most people, that you don't feel that you love X, though you do. You know that you love X. So there's aspects of love that goes beyond feeling. That has a commitment to a value. It's an ethic. It's an ethic of care. That goes beyond whether I get good feelings because I'm with this person or not. Though that may be what gets you there, gets you attached, that doesn't necessarily mean that you stay that way. The second part of the exercise is to forgive life, God, the universe, universal intelligence, or any higher power you believe in for any unfairness and mistreatment you've experienced. The fact of the matter is most of us don't have a healthy image of God, which is one that is, interactive with the divine. Most of us don't have an interactive, view with the divine. So the divine is sort of like sitting outside, setting up, the lose-lose situation of my life. And I'm thinking, and I've noticed that everybody else seems to have got a better ticket and they've got win-win situations.
Right.
And I'm thinking, hey, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
So, so you're pissed off at God, for somehow shortchanging you.
Yep.
That's your image of God. And one of the ways that you... sort of begin to meet God in God's terms is if you get to this equanimity of forgiveness that we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the condition that God set up before he created anything, before light was separated from darkness. There was this, you forgave everything. And so in the same way, you're saying, well, I need to find God in God's terms, not in my terms.
Right.
Now, one of the problems I had with reading through this love formula, and we do need to move on to the other 3 points, is that a lot of people think that the way you experience God is feeling good. Oh, yeah, I feel good. I got these good God feelings coming through me. You know, mm-hmm. I meditate. I feel good. Well, you know, that's true for the first 2 weeks, maybe, if that long. Then you feel nothing. Mm-hmm. And there's in the mystical path, there's periods of dryness, of desert, of not being connected with your feelings at all. There's a variety of states that one goes through, mm-hmm. mainly because we're attempting to reduce God to our image of God, of mm-hmm. ourselves, and rather than going to this desert of the imageless God. And the problem with the images of God, you don't get no good feelings, you know. Somebody ain't scratching your back when this is happening.
No, you're right. I mean, enlightenment, you know, you hear of people going out in the mountains and meditating. It's not going to be, like you said, bliss and fun at every moment. Although, like you said, you know, I sort of have this almost like pragmatic idealism that it is possible. So,
life will dissuade you of that. But don't worry about it. If until then, good luck, you know.
All right.
And, you know, so exercise 3 is, again, we've felt forgiveness. So we've relaxed a little bit. We have forgiven the universe for putting us in a lousy situation. And we also, last thing on step 2 is we forgive ourselves, as if we can forgive ourselves. Ultimately, forgiveness is reducing ourselves to our pre-created condition, and the way that I understand it. But let us go to exercise 3. So we've sort of been through with 1 and 2. We've sort of been through the via purgativa.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going into in the classic view of we're beginning to go to the via illuminativa. This is the ecstasy stuff, which we would prefer to start with, but don't necessarily can't. So exercise 3 is love, love, love.
Right.
Okay, here comes the fun part. We're going to summon the power of love and blast it to everyone on our list. Well, I don't know. I'm going to Bush. I'm putting a parenthesis around Bush right now. I haven't quite forgiven him yet.
All right.
But okay. So what is this love blast? Tell me how you do this stuff.
How I do it? Okay. Yeah. So it's very much based around a visualization aspect. We're designing this in a way where it's creative and we can imagine like what love might look like if we were to send it to somebody. So that's where the pink light comes from, and you imagine it coming from your heart and surrounding that person. So I think what you mentioned a good point when you were saying the forgiveness stage. It's sort of like this precursor stage, and this is sort of like actually like sending them sort of this intention of love and positivity.
Which is the stage of what? But in the forgiveness thing, forgiveness is the divine newtology, and then the givenness, which is what creation,
right?
So this is the creative part.
Oh, right, exactly.
This is where this is where all the terms of the contract of who we are reset to the best thing, and I'm given not a lose-lose ticket, but I'm given a win-win ticket.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I like this quote here on the side by Wayne Dyer. Love mm-hmm. is the ability and willingness to allow those that you care for to be what they choose for themselves without any insistence that they satisfy you. And this exercise is the ultimate sort of example and demonstration of that, where you're going to unconditionally send them this without them maybe even knowing it, you know, and this is after you've done the forgiveness, so you're in a really good state that you're willing to at least uncover it, and like you said, you know, what I'm getting from you is this isn't something that we can do in a 45-minute, 5-step process, but you're uncovering, like, some really powerful, like, steps, like, we're at that path, like, we see the path, we are like, okay, it's time to take that first step, and so this is really moving us along there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have a personal gripes with Wayne Dyer, because basically he's a snake oil salesman, selling you things that shouldn't be bought.
Mm-hmm.
But the and even the way he sets this up is he sort of sets up as, well, I'm so self-involved that I realize that other people have to be as self-involved with themselves as I am with myself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a sort of saying, well, I'm a narcissist and I know that the whole world revolves around me. But I'm going to pretend that you're a narcissist, too, and that the whole world should revolve around you. And if it does, I won't allow that to bother me, because, after all, I'm the center of the universe, and I know that you're only a figment of my imagination. That's my version of Wayne Dyer. But the
I guess I sort of took it as you're sort of allowing people to be who they are. And you were mentioning the judgment earlier, sort of like removing this judgment from I want them to be this. Like sometimes I don't know if you I don't know what to call this, but some kind of like spiritual maybe egotism where you're like, oh, I'm so spiritual. Like they need to be meditating or they should be doing this, you know. And that's kind of this.
Yeah, okay, scripts. Well, scripts, we get our scripts from our parents and and we try to, in our early 20s, when we're first playing with ourselves as adults, we usually find that we are running by scripts that were that we saw around us as we grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, what happens is that we see that they don't work in varying degrees, and so we have to rewrite them together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the partnership you get with somebody. You get with somebody that you love and care enough about, and you say, okay, well, we need to rewrite this script so that it works for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And people are bringing in different, usually they have some simpatical scripts so that it's not completely impossible to write them together, but you rewrite them. But that's not what love is here. Love seems to be doing something with recognizing that love is an energetic presence, awareness. You know, mm-hmm. It's this primary awareness in which all creation takes place.
Definitely.
And this is that love is the divine. So in some ways, it is us, but in another way, we're more it than we are ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing is you're just letting the recognition of that love be. So you're it's sort of like in the Maslow's ladder of we've gone from our need levels,
mm-hmm.
and we've sort of dealt with them. What we've done is you've neutralized them. We haven't gotten rid of our needs. We still got needs. Needs are okay. You know, needs and attachments are, intimacy are connected there to a degree. It's a pattern. But we've neutralized them. We've sort of cleaned them out a little bit. And then with love, we're just recognizing that this is a whole energetic process that goes, it's at a being level.
Right.
And we're going through that. So you find yourself doing this exercise with certain people, and you'll find that it's easier to love some people than others, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. There is an infinite power within you called love, but it can only reach its full potential if you open your heart and allow it to flow out to everyone unconditionally. Well, unconditionally is always such an interesting word.
It's really easy to say.
It gets used a couple times.
It's very easy to say, and practicing it is definitely a different story.
Yeah. So, well, even opening your heart may be easier said than done.
Yeah.
So tell me about that, Aaron.
Okay. To me, a lot of this stuff is just based around, here we have spend 30 seconds or so thinking loving thoughts toward the person. I love you. I appreciate you. To me, it's like the capacity for somebody to take someone who's done something really bad to them and to actually say, create the possibility of I'm going to be, send this person an appreciation for the lesson that's come to me. They're doing the best they can with what they know. It's that mindset of just meeting people where they're at. And understanding that everyone's on a different path.
Well, but there are people where you don't want to meet them where they're at. There are people who do you bad that you can forgive them as a way of releasing their hold over you because they've hurt you, but you don't forgive them to the point where they you will let them to hurt you again,
right.
Or anyone else for that matter,
mm-hmm.
if they're that kind of predator.
Sure. In which case, you would just go the other way as fast as possible.
Not just go the other way. First of all, it might mean that love means to stand up for justice. It might mean to say. It might mean to name the victimizer. It might mean to take another act of courage,
mm-hmm.
which is very different than what we're talking about here in terms of this path. But we should try, and we've only got a few minutes left. We might go a little bit over just to not to short shift these things. So, but let's take love in the two ways that it's given here, because the two exercises, number three and four, are actually interrelated. And the fact that you have in the love, you have this energetic release of acceptance, and a radical acceptance of everyone and anyone, but also acceptance that is practically seen as the way you value your issue. And of course, it was based on the issue of whether I'm going to be destitute tomorrow or not. The next exercise, I think, goes hand in glove with it, which is called Released Trust and Give Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you notice release is what you said, we talked about is forgiving. Mm-hmm. Release will not be a better word for release. So what is this release here? So now you should be feeling pretty good about yourself and about life in general, right? Because you're feeling this energetic flow of love for everyone. Which is nice to imagine, even if it's just imaginary. Let's make it easier to get in track. Press your thumb and index finger together. So you're using, and take a few deep breaths while you maintain the feeling of love. Next time you start to feel weighed down with problems, you resume the posture as a way of remembering.
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of what he's talking about here.
Yep.
The next thing you do is, while you're still in the state of love, think about the original problem and visualize the problem as clearly as you can. Now, okay, so you've revisit the problem. Then you release it, right, which is to forgive it again,
mm-hmm.
Like a balloon in the air. So you release it in the sense you say, well, this, you haven't thought of an answer for the problem, like, my boss is going to give me a raise. But you're going to say it's going to be, the universe will take care of it,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be resolved, and then you let it go. Right. Okay, I'm going to let it go. You continue to feel this love, mm-hmm. and then you give thanks. You give thanks that, one, the problem is solved, even though you don't necessarily see that happening right at that instant. You give thanks. And you also give thanks in a sort of existential sense of that the sense of love that you were experiencing in three is a primal gratitude. That, mm-hmm. again, that forgiveness that we talked about as being sort of the place before creation takes place is the attitude of gratitude. You could see it as maybe the trace, the after image of, feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
It's the relaxation from feeling good.
Right, right.
It's the same like when you make love, the afterglow of cuddling afterwards is considered almost as good, if not better, than the animal rush to release. We haven't dealt with this these issues here in an erotic sense.
And also, I wanted to add with exercise four, I think the point of this is, like, you had sort of brought this up earlier about how there's sort of this residual, like you're not going to get rid of it like in 2 seconds, So the idea is for this to kind of be a tool in your tool belt for when things start to come back and you can kind of go back to that state.
Yeah, and like anything with these kinds of practices or meditations, use them on little problems initially, and they also, it becomes a habit of mine, becomes a yep. style of reflection.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And in that way, a kind of meditation. And then rushing forward to the last exercise, which is an interesting one. He calls it ACT here.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's your take on the end here?
Well, I think it's, well, he starts by having a visualization of feeling basically complete clarity. Basically, like, you see that
afterglow from Pure Love, right?
The afterglow. We'll go back to that afterglow. Mm-hmm. He has you start with an affirmation based on your problems. And I find, you know, one of the good things about flushing out problems is that you can make affirmations of an opposite of exactly what state you'd want to be in. So he talks about taking 5 minutes every morning and dwelling on the state that you want to be in. So that is an action to take. But I think also something more here is like that sort of sets up your actions for the day. Flow from this state and this place, and you start right in the morning. So, I mean, can you imagine that some people start TV with news about death and destruction? Well, and compare that with this. You know, you start out with your perfect state of feeling, state of mind. You know, I mean, that's, to me, seems like a very nice way to begin your morning.
Well, yeah, and this is going in terms of the issue of giving thanks. Is this is where the gratitude slowly becomes an attitude. Mm-hmm. And actually, and though he calls it act here, what he's really saying is he's basically not saying act. He's saying affirm.
Mm-hmm.
And make up your mind that your challenge will be conquered without a doubt.
Sure.
And that so the issue then is to you know, and then, you know, take time to visit this sense of love and divine practice. One of the practices I often return to that is available to many people is a lay-led thing in the Christian movement, which is called a centering prayer, which is a form of contemplative prayer for the masses. It came out of the monastic tradition of Christianity after it was reinvented by by people like Thomas Merton and stuff. So Thomas Keating, who was a younger contemporary of Merton's at the same abbey, is now teaching as many people as he can how to do centering prayer, which is very simple. And in terms of the love formula, it's different than the love formula. The love formula is dealing with you know, practical issues in your life and how to deal with them. What contemplative prayer does is it says take 10 minutes a day and turn yourself to the to whatever the ultimate is, to whatever the divine is, and just will towards it. Just be attentive to it. Don't, you know, now God is beyond our images, so, you know, it's not like, you know, okay, I got God as a big guy on a throne up in the sky and I'm going to imagine that. But rather, you know, God is the deep mystery of love within my own heart, and I'm going to will towards it. And, you know, sometimes your mind will settle down. Mostly it won't. Mm-hmm. The nature of the mind is to judge, so it's going to be running around making little judgments all the time. And you're going to get caught up in that noise, because that's what we do most of the time. But then you just say to yourself, no, well, this is my time to pay attention to this ground of my being, to this, the deeper connection to the divine. That is contemplation. That it, you know, it happens beyond our intention. We have to intend to do it, and we have to practice it in a regular way for it to have its best effects.
Well, I was saying I read this book by Brian Weiss, Tapping into the Infinite Power of Love. You know, and he taught, and this really connect. This really stood out to me when you made your that idea about forgiveness being sort of a pre-creation activity. Mm-hmm. You know, and he talks about how it's not so much that we have to learn love and learn forgiveness; it's that we need to unlearn everything else. So that really solidified it when you said that, because it made me realize that really forgiveness is natural, and we're literally aligning ourselves with the pre-creation. I mean, I don't know if you can get better than that. That's like before creation. I mean, that's pretty incredible.
Well, and you know, and that's where God is God in God's self.
Wow.
rather than having God in what I think is myself, you know, entertaining God as I am in myself. There's a point of unknowing that we go to, which is that slowly dissolves all of those distinctions. But we don't do that. That's done for us. God brings us to God in God's own due time. And now we are out of our due time. Thank you for
thank you
dealing with my new age skepticism.
No, it's great. I think the takeaway is that there's a lot more to all this. This is literally like just barely like barely scratching the surface. And you know what I'm hearing from you is there's a lot more to this, and we certainly understand that.
And you know, with the MP3 of this, we'll have the website connected with it. But the website is called
yearoflove.org.
The yearoflove.org. www. The year of love.
It's actually
one word.
Year of love, without the.
No, okay. Yearoflove.
.org.
Mm-hmm. Yearoflove.org. You can go to there. I'm not sure. So far, apparently, the love formula is not necessarily available at this point as a freebie. It wasn't sent out to me. Apparently,
really?
It was only until July 15th is what, according to it, said on the. So you might want to see how that's set up.
Yep.
My suggestion would be is that you let the MP3 file be available for anybody who wants to download it rather than having to send it to them. But that's
yep. That's going to be, I think, their next.
I think that would be my only suggestion.
Sure.
Well, okay. Now you've been listening to Touchstones. I'm your host, Paul Nash. We've had our guest, Aaron
Mungle.
Mungle. not, but that's with an A rather than an O, right? Mungle.
Yes,
okay.
It is.
Yeah, you know. So he isn't, and this is WCOMLP Chapel Hill, Carrboro, 103.5 FM radio station, your community radio station, and thank you for tuning in and.